Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning again. I'm Marty Goldenson, in for Brian Lehrer. This year brought the news of tainted pet food, children's toys, and food products, making all of us just a little bit more alert about what we bring into our country and our homes. But are we just starting to understand the toxins that surround us and how they affect us? A coalition of environmental groups has gathered 35 people from 7 states to test the presence of 3 classes of chemicals that have been linked to asthma, learning disabilities, and even cancer. The results were startling, as all of the participants contained at least 7 of the 20 chemicals that were being tested. Joining me to talk about the study and the results are Judy Robinson, one of the leaders of the project, and Heather Lukmus. She was a participant in the project. Welcome to WNYC, both of you.
Great to be here. Thanks, Marty.
Good. It's just a figure of speech. Where are you? You're not actually here.
This is Judy, and I'm in Boston.
And Heather?
I am located in Latham, New York.
All right. Where's Latham?
It's about 10 miles north of Albany.
Ah, gotcha. Okay. I've had better lines to Baghdad, but it's okay. It sounds like you're there. You know? Judy, there's a lot of scientific lingo involved here. Can you explain to us in lay terms or close to that what your project was looking for and why?
Sure. We wanted to undertake this project because of all of the concerns that the general public is beginning to become aware that they have around toxics in products. So we wanted to really investigate the relationship between the toxic chemicals that we know are in products that we use in our daily life and what's in us. And so we approached these 35 people to look inside themselves, and we tested them for 3 classes of chemicals. Again, these are chemicals very common in everyday household products that we all use. One is called phthalates, and we find those in cosmetics, skincare products, deodorants, aftershave, perfumes, and we also find it in plastics, particularly PVC plastic, and the PVC plastic that's soft and pliable, like your shower curtain or children's bibs, placemats, those kinds of things that you can actually move the plastic fairly easily. We also looked for bisphenol A, and bisphenol A is found in baby bottles and reusable water bottles like your Nalgene bottles. Mm-hmm. It's found in dental sealants and the inner lining of metal cans. And we looked for flame retardants, particularly what we call PBDEs.
And again, when you say you looked for them, you looked for them in people's blood, in their urine?
That's correct. Right. We looked in people's blood and urine, and we sent them to 2 labs, one in Stockholm and one in Canada, for analysis.
Right, right. And you found these startling results. I mentioned that they were startling, but not what they were in a little more detail. Can you fill us in?
Sure. As you mentioned, all 35 participants had at least 7 of the 20 chemicals. So when I describe them as 3 chemical classes, there's a total of actually 20 chemicals we tested for. 33 of the participants who contributed urine samples had phthalates in their body, and 2 people didn't actually contribute urine samples, but everybody who did had these phthalates. And those same 33 people had bisphenol A in their urine, and all 35 people had 6 types of PBDEs, or those flame retardants, in their bodies. And what's truly remarkable, really, for us, that's startling about this, is that 34 of the 35 people had detectable levels of DECA PBDE. And the reason that that's interesting for New Yorkers is there's legislation to try and phase out the use of DECA, and industry has been saying for a long time that DECA is not in people's bodies, and this study clearly shows that, in fact, it is.
Heather?
Yes?
What did they find in you?
I had levels of all of the chemicals that were tested for in my body, probably one of the most startling discoveries that was made as a result of my participation in this study was a high level of a particular chemical in the PBDE category, which was actually the result of an exposure that occurred when I was about 2 years old. And given the fact that I'm now 36, it was amazing to me that this chemical could persist in my body at such an elevated level for 34 years.
Yeah, that must be also very scary that this chemical's there. What might it do to you, and is there anything you can do about it?
As far as I know, there's nothing that can be done about it. It's not a chemical that can be exercised out of your body. It's from what I understand, it's a persistent bioaccumulative chemical that is found in the fatty tissue, and so it's pretty persistent.
Before we get to the sort of wider political, issues and what can be done about this. In the wider sense for the public, let me ask you, did this scare you to death, having this? Is this like, getting a test for some terrible disease, or do you know that it's just, a chance something could happen to you?
Well, I think the bottom line is that we just don't know for sure. There just hasn't been enough research done to prove one way or another, but I think there is enough evidence to suggest that there is the potential for harm. Certainly, studies have been done on laboratory animals that have shown detrimental health effects, and I guess at this point I can only speculate. I can only speculate what will happen to me long term, and I can only speculate on what the health impacts from my two young children that I most likely passed the chemical on to will be.
Right. Let me turn back to you, Judy Robinson, with the Environmental Health Fund. Maybe I'm naive, but 30 years ago, I was, as a reporter, doing stories about the Toxic Substances Control Act, TSCA. I thought the government was sort of looking after me on this issue. Why suddenly do we need this grassroots study of, it's not even an elaborate study, it's almost, it's just 35 people, but even so, to show, these chemicals are in us and something should be done, I felt like, what year is this? This sounds like 1970 to me. What's
right.
changed? What's happening? Is it that the chemicals are different, or is it the inaction in Washington? What's happening?
No, we certainly have more chemicals than we had 40 years ago and 30 years ago. On the other hand, things are just, it's business as usual. I don't think you're alone, Marty. I think that the majority of the population, if you ask them, would say, of course the government has tested to make sure these products are safe before they go on the shelves. Don't be ridiculous. This is America. But it's not happening. And that's a fact. So the government is not checking to ensure safety of these products. And, in fact, the chemicals themselves, most of them have not been adequately screened for impacts to health. So, for example, while a company might look at a product to see whether there are acute effects, if it's lipstick or skin cream, something that you would apply on your face, they might look and make sure you're not going to develop an itching, burning rash the second you use it. But they aren't looking at the long-term low-dose effects of the chemicals that you're literally applying onto your skin on a daily basis. We're looking at that. We're working with toxicologists and endocrinologists to understand these low-dose, long-term effects of the use of these products every day. And we're saying that it's past time for the government to put the genie back in the bottle. We have to have a sensible state-level regulations if they can move faster than the federal government, and ultimately new chemical policy regulations at the federal level that are going to change this burden of proof. So before products get on the shelves, they've been thoroughly tested for their impacts, not only on the user, but as Heather mentions, on a nursing child, or on a fetus of a woman who's actually using these products.
Is the EPA going to look at your work and say, we got 35 people from 7 states, that's not a scientific study?
Well, we never claimed it was a scientific study. What we do know is that CDC has been looking at literally hundreds and hundreds of people for the for evidence of industrial chemicals in their body. And what they say is approximately 600 industrial chemicals are in any given person at any given time. They never look for the sources of those chemicals, and they never look at the health effects of those chemicals. We've been trying to look at the sources. So we've said, okay, we're full of phthalates, we're full of PBDEs, we're full of BPA. We don't want it. Where does it come from? This isn't anything natural. And so we looked and found that these chemicals are in everyday consumer products we're all using. I guarantee you've had exposures already today, as I have, even though I'm very, very conscious. And so we want a new federal chemical policy bill, but we also feel like the states can take the lead, and that's true in New York, and it's true in Washington State, Maine, Massachusetts, Connecticut, et cetera. They're moving faster than the federal government.
Whether it's the Fed or the state, what exactly do you want? What would be useful? What would protect people?
Well, we need to overhaul the system so that, the burden of proof is put back on those profiteers of these products, in other words, the companies that are making them and profiting from them. They need to do adequate safety testing before these chemicals are ever put on the market. And so we don't want to presume that chemicals are safe without the data to prove it. And that's really what's happening now. We just don't have the studies. And so Heather's right. We don't really know what the consequences may be, but we know that we're each individuals and may be exquisitely vulnerable to toxics at different points in our lives or combinations. So we want there to be adequate safety testing before chemicals get on the market. That data should be shared with the public so we can make informed choices about what we want to be exposed to. And we want to ensure that the chemicals that we go after first for phase out are the most hazardous, and identify that and ensure that no chemicals would be in the bodies of children. We want to ensure that children no longer are born pre-polluted with these industrial chemicals. So we would prioritize those chemicals found in the bodies of babies as the first to be phased out.
Makes sense. It's Marty Goldenson in for Brian Lehrer, talking to Judy Robinson of the Environmental Health Fund and to Heather Lukmus, who was part of the study. Let me turn back to you for a second. Heather, time to talk in a practical way, because it seems to me, whether it's the feds or the state, they all operate at a glacial clip. So people will want to know, I certainly want to know, in my house, what I might do in changing what I buy, what I use, habits, just to be safe, even if it is not 100% proven dangerous. Have you learned some of these things, Heather?
Sure. I mean, I think to the extent that, at least personally, to the extent that I can avoid using plastic containers for storing food, I opt for glass. I have a 9-month-old son who I feed using glass baby bottles. I think other choices we can make are to the extent that we have backyards that we can grow our own food in, we know exactly where that food is coming from and what's on that food when we're growing it ourselves. I think educating ourselves, arming ourselves with the knowledge that we need to make informed choices. There are many great websites on the internet that do list products that are free from these chemicals, and I believe several of those sites are listed in the biomonitoring report.
Judy Robinson, do you have some things to add to that in terms of what people can do in their everyday lives to avoid getting so many chemicals in their bloodstream?
Oh, absolutely. And people should go to isitinus.com. Again, isitinus.com, and there is a section there on what we can do as communities and voters and consumers together, and there's also a page called What You Can Do, and that's about some real personal choices that people can make to reduce their exposure. So that's on isitinus.com, but let me just say quickly, again, PVC plastic, if you can avoid it, you're doing yourself a lot of good. We've heard about the lead recalls associated with some vinyl products, the bibs, the lunch boxes, but it's not just lead. Phthalates are a very, very big concern, and so if you avoided PVC plastic, you'll know it because it's also called vinyl, and it's got the number 3 in the little chasing arrow on the bottom of the products. If you don't know what the plastic is made of, ask. especially if it's for your kids. Ask the managers of the store. They'll call the companies and they'll demand the answers. And that's really important for communicating back to the marketplace that you want to change.
I mentioned in the sort of billboard to this whole segment that it isn't just what you eat, but sometimes what you sit on. Is that right?
That's right. And in terms of the PBDEs, you would want to look for products that do not contain these. They're found in foam and upholstery, but if you went to, for example, IKEA, you could be assured that there wouldn't be any PBDEs in the foam. Likewise, they're in electronics, televisions, for example, and computers, but many companies, as a result of this information that we're bringing to the public, are beginning to make electronics with alternatives to PBDEs, so Canon, Dell, HP, Intel, Ericsson, Apple, Sony, they're all getting the picture, and they're moving quickly. And in terms of BPA, you know, Heather's using glass bottles, which is what I use with both my kids, but there are alternatives to baby bottles that have BPA. For example, the company Born Free has a BPA-free baby bottle that's on the market, and they're getting rush orders for it. So there really is a way to take a personal role in reducing your exposure, but it is ubiquitous. So
yes, one of the senses, and we have to just finish up, where I got a sense that it was really ubiquitous was that one part of your group was this priest, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was a vegetarian and still had many things inside of him and wasn't quite sure how they were getting there. And maybe from his drinking bottle on his bike, maybe from his bike seat.
Maybe from his bike seat. Here's where legislation really needs to come into play, because BPA is in all the linings of our tin cans or aluminum cans. So your tuna fish, your beer, your Coca-Cola, you know, your tomatoes, that BPA is in the linings of the cans. How do we avoid tin cans? I mean, it's just what we do. However, and I'll say it quickly, when they eliminated BPA in cans in Japan, the levels found in the population dropped approximately 50%. This is the same thing with PBDEs. When they looked at the breast milk in women in Sweden, they made it a priority to get rid of PBDEs as a country, and those levels went way down. Now we, as North Americans, have the highest level of flame retardants in our breast milk, and that's because we don't have adequate legislation in order to get rid of them.
All right. Thank you, both of you, for taking the time. We've been talking to both Judy Robinson from the Environmental Health Fund and to Heather Lukmus, who was a participant in this study. I am going right out and getting myself a glass couch.
There are other options for you, Marty, but I appreciate the humor. We like to have that in the environmental health field.
Good.
Because it's not all bad news. We've
right.
got a lot of motivation.
Thanks a lot. And coming up, we're going to talk about baby names.